There are parables you preach with a smile. And then there's this one. This isn't the text that you choose when you're trying to make a good impression. It's the one you think about skipping. Because nobody likes a crook. And to be honest, it sounds like Jesus just gave one a standing ovation. A dishonest manager gets caught mishandling someone else's wealth. The jig is up. He's being fired. And there's no pension. Too weak to dig, too proud to beg, he hatches a plan. He calls in his master's debtors. How much do you owe? 100 jugs of oil. Make it 50. 100 measures of wheat. Make it 80. He doesn't ask permission. He doesn't clean up the books. He just starts cutting deals. Fast. And Jesus says, the master commended the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. Come again? Jesus, the one who blessed the poor and flipped temple tables, just praised a guy running a backroom hustle? We want tidy morals. But Jesus refuses to be domesticated. Because this parable isn't about honesty. It's about clarity. Clarity in a moment of crisis, clarity in the face of consequences. He wasn't holy, but he was honest about the moment he was in, and maybe that's the beginning of wisdom. Not perfection, but clarity. The kind of clarity that reveals how limited our time is, how fragile our influence is, and how urgent mercy becomes when the systems around us are crumbling. He doesn't waste time defending himself. He acts. He uses what little he has left to shape a future he might survive. And even if he didn't mean to show mercy, he reduced someone's burden. And Jesus says, look at that. Not at his ethics, but his urgency. Now, he's not a model of moral purity. He's a man backed into a corner. He wasn't righteous, but he was responsive. And that counts for something. Jesus says, the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the children of light. In other words, people in the world act like their future matters. Why don't the followers of Jesus? Why don't we? We who have been baptized into a kingdom that cannot be shaken, why do we move so slowly when it comes to justice? Why do we clutch our resources like their salvation? Why do we treat mercy like a luxury? Jesus isn't praising corruption. He's grieving complacency. Because the truth is, we live in a system where debt is weaponized. The poor are crushed beneath interest rates and red lines, false balances, and rigged scales. And just like Amos said, you trample on the needy, you make the ephah small and the shekel great. And Amos didn't just name injustice, he named the mechanism dishonest scales, inflated prices, markets built on exploitation. And he saw how religion was used to bless the whole system. Sound familiar? The prophet saw it, Jesus saw it, and we see it now. Whole neighborhoods, communities, and if we're honest, whole women-led communities, LGBT plus communities, communities of color, treated as disposable as long as someone profits at the top. The gospel doesn't blink. Jesus tells a story about a man who used the tools of that world to make space for someone else. Even if his motives were selfish, his actions lifted a burden. He didn't fix the world, he didn't redistribute wealth, but he let somebody breathe. And if the dishonest can do that, what excuse do the faithful have? There's a liberation in this thread. You might not have seen it at first, but it's there because when the manager slashes the bills, he's not just protecting himself. He's loosening chains. Because that's what debt relief looks like. That's what mutual aid looks like. It's what student loan cancellation, digital bail funds, medical loan and debt relief look like and do every day. They say, let's cut the weight someone's carrying. And Jesus says, take notes. Theologian James Cone said that the gospel isn't a theory of salvation. It's a story of God's solidarity with the oppressed. And even here in this messy, compromised tale, we catch a glimpse of that. Because something holy happens when debt is forgiven. When people are seen not as accounts payable, but as neighbors worth saving. The story isn't a call to manipulation. It's a call to urgency, to movement, to mercy in motion, to live like the kingdom is actually near. Too many of us were trained to wait, to stall, to pray about it, and circle back later. But the world can't wait. There are debts to forgive, systems to challenge, people to lift, not just with our money, but with our platforms, our votes, our data, our digital reach, our voices, our presence, our names, our signatures, our courage. We don't have to own a company to be a steward of influence. You steward your attention, your silence, your privilege, your proximity. We live in a world where legality disguises exploitation and order is often code for control. But Jesus doesn't ask us to defend the rules. He asks us to see who's being crushed by them. And in a world aching under war and walls and under unpayable debts, small acts of grace are not small at all. They're resistance. They're repair. They're the kingdom in seed form. The parable ends with a truth we knew was coming. You can't serve two masters. God and wealth don't share power. Mammon, as many translations say for wealth, isn't just money, it's wealth deified. It's money on a throne demanding sacrifice. And wealth is persuasive. It offers security and status. It disguises anxiety as ambition. It teaches us to love convenience more than community. But it can't love you back. And God can. And the invitation isn't just to believe in that God. It's to live like that belief matters. To hold what we've been given with open hands. To see our money, our time, our positions not as rewards, but as assignments. To bless, to repair, to liberate. And yes, to pray, not as escape, but as resistance, to lift up the names of those who govern, not to flatter them, but to remind them that their power is borrowed, And their call, like ours, is to serve. Like 1 Timothy says, God desires that all be saved, even those who are empire builders, even those who forgot they were stewards, not kings. Liberation theologian Gustavo Gutierrez once asked, so you say you love the poor. Then tell me, what are their names? And that's the question that this parable asks in its own way. Not just, do you believe in justice, but are you using what you've been given to make someone's load lighter? Because that's where the gospel shows up. Not in moralizing or sanitized sermons or perfect people, but in crooked systems, through flawed hands and the form of canceled debts, shared bread, and a little less fear. And maybe the real grace in this story isn't the manager or the master, it's that moment when someone crushed by the burden of debt found the bill already torn in half. Because that's the gospel. That's what Jesus has done for us. He took the ledger of our lives and said, let's start over. Grace isn't fair, but it is faithful. So what will you do with what isn't yours? Your job, your house, your title, your voice, your privilege, your access, your inheritance, your healing, your time. You can't keep those forever. But you can use them today to bless, to disrupt, to forgive, to help build the kind of world where no one is disposable and no one is forgotten. Because in the economy of grace, what matters most is not what you held, but who you helped. Amen.